Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. I want to thank you for joining us on the show today. For those of you who want to catch up on our previous episodes, remember to check out our website at voanews.com. We are also on all social media platforms, so be sure to connect with us on there too. So on today's show, we continue with our series exploring the impact of the COVID-19 global pandemic on Africa, especially the economic impact on the lives of millions across the continent. In Africa, infection rates are still low compared to other parts of the world. Global public health experts and policymakers had initially feared for the worst, but almost 6 months since the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a global pandemic, Africa is still one of the least hit continents. And now many are crediting the rapid response by governments like Rwanda, Uganda, Nigeria, and others on the continent in implementing difficult containment measures such as lockdowns and curfews and many others. And they're saying that that's why that's the reason for the low infection rates on the continent. Well, the other theory being advanced as an explanation as to why we have low infection rates on the continent is age. You know, with a population where the majority are under 25, Africa is the youngest continent. However, that also means that with the lockdown restrictions and school closures, that millions of these young people across the continent are stuck at home without access to education. In fact, reports show that across the continent, more than 140 million children are out of school, and of those, 14 million are in South Africa, which also is the continent's viral hotspot. And in September, after several attempts at closing, then reopening, then reclosing the schools, the nation's school system is trying to open, and this time, it might be for real. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
After 5 months of uncertainty and home learning, South Africa is going back to school. The nation closed its 23,000 government schools in March as part of a 9-week lockdown to try to stop the viral spread. They reopened in June, briefly, and then closed again when infection spiked. Most recently, the school system took a 4-week break, sending some 14 million students back home, with plans to resume nationwide in early September. President Cyril Ramaphosa.
Cabinet has decided today that all public schools should take a break for the next 4 weeks. Now, this has also been the experience in a number of other countries, where schools have opened and have also had to close due to the circumstances that each country has had to confront.
A recent survey by the World Health Organization found that schools are fully open in only 6 of 39 countries in sub-Saharan Africa. South Africa is among about a dozen countries that plan to resume in-person learning in September. The WHO and the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund support the reopening of African schools, with UNICEF reporting that the incidence of violence against children has risen since schools were closed. During the closures, nutrition rates have fallen, with more than 10 million children missing school meals. The UN agencies have published health guidelines that they hope will help schools reopen safely. But education experts say this is no ordinary school year. Professor Labi Ramarthan is an education specialist at the University of KwaZulu-Natal in South Africa.
I think the first thing is to recognize that this entire academic year is going to be a disruptive year, that there is not going to be a continuous schooling until the pandemic is almost over, because when individuals are infected, the school closes. There's protocols are put in place to bring back the safety of the schools. So we're going to consistently experience this.
And in that way, he says, this pandemic could present a unique opportunity.
What we need to focus is on to say, how is the learning that they're going to receive right now relevant to them? And that requires almost a review of what we teach in schools and make it relevant to them right now.
The school closures have created other unforeseen opportunities. Recent education graduate Zafira Ahmad built a private teaching business with 7 students between the ages of 3 and 8. Some will return to full-time school, others won't. She acknowledges that her fee, which is about $12 an hour, is out of reach for many South African parents in a country where the minimum wage stands at about $1.20 an hour. She says she sympathizes with the decisions teachers are making right now.
Yeah, I am concerned about contracting the virus, but at the same time, I'm also concerned about the education of children and them lagging behind being out of school. And for me, that concern outweighs the concern of actually getting the virus.
Ahmad says she would much prefer to teach at an actual school and for things to be normal again. But for now, she says she's focused on keeping her students learning. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Funganyi. Thank you for joining us. Let's listen to some of the voices on the streets around the continent. What is on your mind?
My name is Mutavali Apple, and I'm a teacher by profession. So COVID financially has affected we teachers because right now we are not paid since February. And the rent, we are supposed to pay the rent, which is rising now. It's now like 4 months when you're not paying that. So what does it mean to me? That when we resume to start working, I'm meant to get all that money and I pay the landlord. When I don't have money, how will I now afford to buy the food? It means I'm meant to forgo some of my meals. Either break, I'll cut it short, and either I take only one loaf of bread. And, yeah.
Yes, my name's Okello Rex. I'm a photographer. I think economically it has impacted me badly because it's now almost 3 months we have been at home. I've just started work last week. Yeah, life has not been easy. We have been surviving on something very little at home there. As you can see now, the time I move to go and look for money, it's just random, because even if I wake up very early in the morning, it's always just like, it's just like luck. So now I wake up at any time to go and look for money. Yeah, average, I used to earn around 250,000 in a week, but right now, I barely make 50,000 even in a week.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Almost 6 months since the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 as a global pandemic, we don't have a clear picture yet on the extent of the damage to our economies, but it is fair to say that the last 6 months have been very tough on everyone, regardless of where you live or what you do for a living. And so today we want to start taking a look at some of the effects on the various sectors of the economy. What we know now in real time is that most sectors are struggling. For example, tourism, a billion-dollar industry on the continent, will have the worst year in decades. The World Travel and Tourism Council says that travel and tourism on the continent, which contributes over $150 billion to Africa's economy, supporting millions of jobs from tour operators to hotels, food suppliers, transportation companies, and many others, that this industry will see a massive decline in sales. Now, tourism is but one of the many industries that will take a hit. The creative industry, for example, has also seen a massive decline in sales, especially the performing arts. And then there are other cultural workers like painters, writers, storytellers. And my next guest, who is both of those, Tanzanian producer and filmmaker Honeymoon Aljabri, had just published her children's book and was ready to embark on a global tour to promote it when the COVID-19 hit. She was forced to halt all those plans.
Yeah. Oof, boy, I tell you. It's really, really tough because my book just came out and I do not have opportunity to do a tour. I can't go anywhere where I can just meet these kids that I wrote book to them, for them, to sit with them and to talk and see them how they, receive my book. I don't have that opportunity.
How they react to the money.
Yes.
Currently based in Dallas, Miss Aljabri's book Amani, the character Amani, is part of a series based on a curious African girl who loves to travel and visit various tourist attractions in Africa.
Yeah, I didn't want Amani to be from Tanzania or Kenya or Rwanda. I wanted Amani to be an African girl. That's like if I send her to Sudan, she'll be able to tell the Sudan story or to just highlight the tourism attraction or the heritage site than to just be like a visitor. I want her to be from that particular
time.
Yes, to belong there.
Why do you think Amani is important to especially young people in the diaspora?
I want kids to understand the beauty of Africa, the history, the culture. And the most important is not only diaspora who are outside the continent. I want even kids inside the continent. Just say, let's say somebody from Sudan to understand the culture of Libya, or somebody from Libya to read the story of the same girl from Tanzania. So that to spread like the beauty of the continent inside continent. It's not only about like Western to know how beautiful Africa is. I want like a kid from Madagascar to understand how beautiful and how lucky she is to be an African, to see how Sudan is, how Libya is, how Nigeria. Like, I think Africa, it's the most diverse continent than the rest. So that's what I want to highlight, what we have.
You don't feel that there's enough appreciation for this diversity and beauty in Western media, or Western perception in general?
Yes, we don't have that much. And if we have much, they just tend to have particular part of Africa, maybe from west or from east or from north. They don't have this like pan-Africa, say like this is Africa. I think it's the time that African, if we put our mind together and put our power together, we are most powerful. So I think from the beginning, you inject this in powerful thoughts to these kids that they can be anything. And they just be proud that they're Africans.
Amani is a Swahili word. What does it mean? Why did you choose that name?
I think peace, it's what makes this world go on. Like, if the place doesn't have peace, doesn't exist in one way or another. Like, you won't see the beauty of that place if there's no peace. You can't walk around if people are fighting.
Mm.
You won't be able to explore the unique of the particular area, or even human being, if they don't have peace of mind. You won't be able to talk to them and to make them understand you, or you to understand them. Mm. So that's the reason I choose this Amani. It's just something that tells all.
What are some of the things that are stopping us as a continent from getting that Amani? Whether it's the peace of mind, whether it's conflict, as you know, real conflict taking place on the continent, or other things that are blockages to achieving that Amani.
The greediness of our leaders. Like, if we had leaders like Sankara or like Kwame Nkrumah, like the way they thought about Africa, like the united Africa, the powerful Africa, I think we could be way far. But now, just let's talk about even African trade. Kenyan, they sell this roses, like beautiful fresh flower in Europe. And Ghana don't buy flowers direct from Kenya, they buy from Europe.
Let's talk about your process as a writer during this time of COVID. And generally, as a storyteller, an African storyteller in the time of COVID, how are you surviving?
Oof, boy, I tell you, It's really, really tough because my book just came out and I do not have opportunity to do a tour. I can't go anywhere where I can just meet these kids that I wrote book to them, for them, to sit with them and to talk and see them, how they, you know, receive my book. I don't have that opportunity.
How they react to the money.
Yes. And another thing, I can't travel, like, say, city to city or country to country to do this kind of exhibition and tell them, like, what is Amani about, what I want to see Amani doing, like, to give back. How can she give back to the community? I don't have that opportunity. I just, like, the most I can do, it's to try social media, like, to post in Facebook and try all this platform of social media. That's it. So it's really hard for, especially for somebody like me. I'm new and this is my first children book, so it's kind of a little bit push the edge.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that COVID has disrupted a lot of people's lives. And I think that there are problems that are very specific to you as an African storyteller and the type of resources that you would need to thrive in this environment. So right now, the book that is out, the Amani that is out, the first edition in this series, where is Amani?
She is in Serengeti, Tanzania.
If you were to tell something about the Serengeti that is not in the book, what is it? What do you want people to know about the Serengeti?
Oh my God, it has the most beautiful sunrise and sunset in the world. I know I'm from Tanzania. Maybe you say, like, oh, because you're from there. No,
right.
I've been around the world. I love sunsets and sunrise. I usually even wake in the morning to make sure just to catch it. But Serengeti has the most beautiful sunrise and sunset, and the hemisphere. It's like, if you have ever watched this Lion King, the movie.
Yes.
Pretty much, it's come alive.
It's like a work of art. You make me want to go visit right now. I mean,
you should. It's like
you describe it.
Yeah, you should. You should. Like I'm from Tanzania, and I've been to Serengeti twice. The first time I went, I was young, so I didn't care. Like, the second time when I went, that's actually when I was writing the book.
You went?
Yes,
I went to part of the research.
Yes, and I stayed there for like 4 nights and 5 days. I was like, oh, God is good. It's so beautiful. And speaking of it, the second book will be Zanzibar, like Amani swims with mermaid in Zanzibar. And Zanzibar, it's really beautiful place. And the sky, it's blue, the water, it's turquoise. It's somewhere. I know you like skies, so you
I love sky.
You should go Zanzibar.
And if there's a mermaid in Zanzibar, I'll go see that mermaid too.
Yes. Soon I'll have this Amani Read to Lead campaign. My aim is to collect 10,000 books for 10,000 children in the refugees camp, because I know Africa and around the world, they have all these camps. Then these kids, they don't get opportunity to go outside the camp. I want the world to come inside the camp.
Tanzanian producer and filmmaker Honeymoon Aljabri. You're listening to Upfront on The Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Now we continue our conversation on how the COVID-19 pandemic has affected creatives and cultural workers across the continent. And like I said, the economic impact of the lockdown restrictions, which, you know, were a very necessary public health response to the health crisis, is being felt by every sector of the economy. But more so, the creative industry. For example, musicians who make a living by selling concert tickets are not able to perform during a pandemic. That would totally be against social distancing restrictions. But in South Africa, the country with the highest infection rates on the continent, Musicians like hip-hop artist Gigi LaMaine have had to find alternative ways to engage their audience and to find time to work on new projects. The kings and fathers of queens, you reign in your quest for the truth and striving to sleep. The people in your past can relate
your victory great. I saw you on the ships in your graves, your fathers relate. Many cries. So I'm working on my album and I'm working on an EP that's completely different to who I am. I've decided to experiment in the time where I'm doing a lot of, you know, dance music. And I mean, I'm a hip hop artist, so that's not like common. But I've decided to experiment with the dance music world to collaborate with a lot of people, you know, the likes of Rosarie, she's from Tanzania, Stanley Inao, he's from Cameroon, and he's also on this song with me, as well as DJ Tira. And DJ Tira is like one of the, you know, the biggest moguls in our country when it comes to music, entertainment, and making a name for yourself. So I'm really excited about those things, and it's given me a chance to really think about where I'm headed and all the work that I need to do.
Now, Gigi is also part of a group of top African artists who contributed to a one-campaign musical project that raised awareness about COVID-19 while calling on leaders and citizens to stand together against the deadly virus.
So everyone is saying that they're excited for the music that comes out of this pandemic, that it's going to be phenomenal. How has the lockdown been creatively?
The lockdown has been amazing in the sense that I've managed to really learn a lot about myself. So I've been in a space where I've been able to do everything that I haven't been able to do before. So whether it's like learning how to create the perfect, I don't know, like paella meal, to being able to become a little more independent in studio, or to be able to get through my visual production. So, I mean, I've just decided that I'm not going to let the lockdown be something negative to me that I complain about, or, you know, where I just like moan about everything. I'm going to go into it and I'm going to try as much as I can to learn as much as I can from the situation. So I've literally, signed myself up, for instance, for like a random course on digital media and social media. Nice. So I'm like literally studying right now. I've been in studio doing a whole lot of music and stuff. Yeah, so I've just decided I'm not going to let things weigh me down.
Are you working on any musical projects?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm working on my album and I'm working on an EP that's completely different to who I am. I've decided to experiment in the time where I'm doing a lot of, you know, dance music. And I mean, I'm a hip hop artist, so that's not like common. But I've decided to experiment with the dance music world to collaborate with a lot of people, you know, the likes of Rosarie, she's from Tanzania, Stanley Inao, he's from Cameroon, and he's also on this song with me, as well as DJ Tira. And DJ Tira is like one of the, you know, the biggest moguls in our country when it comes to music, entertainment, and making a name for yourself. So I'm really excited about those things, and it's given me a chance to really think about where I'm headed and all the work that I need to do.
How has this pandemic affected the music industry in South Africa?
Well, for one, we can't even perform live. So you can imagine, like, I cannot remember the last, I feel like the last time I performed live in South Africa was in March. And after the lockdown, we've just been at home. We've had to come to a point where we understand how important social media platforms are, and digitizing your brand is important as well. So just learning about like things that we take for granted, like images, content, visual content when it comes to videos, how to be proactive, I guess, in the digital world now, because that's where we live. Like, you can't really be in contact with anyone, because in South Africa right now, I think we're on lockdown level 3, but we're not allowed a whole lot of things. We're not allowed to gather, you know, when there's a certain amount of people. We're not allowed to, I mean, alcohol's been banned. A lot of things have been banned. So as a result, I think a lot of people have had to kind of like restructure their ways of living. But I know for one, we're completely like, the entertainment industry is quiet right now because we can't perform anywhere, and we make a lot of our money from live shows.
Right. Now, I've seen some governments provide different sectors of the economy with some sort of stimulus package. How has your government responded, especially to those in the creative space you know, cultural workers who are struggling because of these shutdowns and other restrictions. Like you say, you cannot perform.
Yeah.
People who are artists can showcase their work. Is the South African government proposing any type of stimulus for you guys?
I mean, we do have something about Department of Home Affairs. I'm not Home Affairs, Arts and Culture, where they've gone out to sort of source proposals when it comes to creative ways to get people working, so to alleviate poverty, for job creation and stuff like that. But I will say that, you know, a lot of people haven't really been able to access that yet, or a lot of people haven't been exposed to the fact that that is something that's there. But the government has put out almost like tenders for different projects you want to do digitally. So I think at this point, we're just trying to figure out how everything works. A lot of people are struggling with just like the administration, like who do I go to? Who do I send this email to? But I think people are slowly, you know, understanding that it is going to be chaotic because this is the first time this has ever happened. And I think we're also just getting into the gist of understanding that, you know, this is new for them as well.
It's a learning process.
And they're really, really trying their best. Yeah, it's a learning process for everyone. I think, I feel like everyone is just like pushed in and we kind of like all have to swim right now. So, you know, shout out to them for putting a lot of these things in place. And I think for us now, it's just about sourcing, you know, the knowledge that we need to be able to get a lot of these things going. I think, I mean, myself for one, there's the Gigi Gang show, which is like the first one woman show by a female hip hop artist. It's a concert and it showcases a lot of females on the continent and in our country who are doing amazing things. And we've had to digitize the concert as well. On the 27th of August, we're doing that. So, I mean, we're worried about things like, you know, streaming, how the airing process will happen. And government are worried about, you know, whether or not, you know, whether it will or not alleviate poverty and all these other different things. So I think we're all, you know, almost in a corner and we're just trying to push and pull until we find the right solution.
I like your sense of optimism in a way.
Thank you.
So as we come to the end of our conversation, now tell me about this new song that you're part of and why did you feel the need to lend your voice to this project?
So the new song is about us hashtag standing together. The idea is that artists come together from different, you know, different parts of Africa. I'm extremely, you know, against the idea of saying different parts of Africa because I do want to see Africa as a borderless society because I feel that we're all like extremely similar. You know, it's just a language, but we're all extremely the same, you know, and the idea is that we're brought together in the song to, you know, become a voice of hope to people, you know, people who are chilling at home and think that they won't come out of the situation to finally understand that there is, you know, there are people that you look up to who believe that you're going to get through this, you know, this tough time. And, you know, Amanda Black, myself, Ben Paul, Yemi Alade, Tu Baba, everybody who's on the song, I think is about just making this the most positive experience that one will, you know, will take part in. I for one have decided to look at this as an experience where I am part of history. You know, I'm just an actor in this and I serve a role and I decide whether I'm going to be grumpy about it or I'm going to be that musician who goes out and proactively does something. And I think the song is something that's allowed me to do that. So I've decided to be that artist who's going to get onto a song and tell people that, you know what, guys, we're actually part of a very historical process. We're going to get past this and we're going to be greater than we've ever thought ourselves to be. I believe, you know, in with everything in me that Africa is a continent that has survived so many things socially, so many things environmentally, biologically, and we just keep on going. And I think the song is just that. It's the narrative that we're able to get past a lot of things regardless of what we're going through. And I'm proud to be part of that.
And with that, we come to the end of our show. I want to thank all of you who joined us on the show today, whether you were listening in on radio or via our podcast, online, streaming. Until next time, my name is Jackson Vunganyi. Goodbye, Africa. Je place un gros big up à tous ceux qui font le taf. Dans les hôpitaux, la tristesse sous les masques. Mister Coro nous a piqué dans la face. On a tous peur, quoi qu'on dise, quoi qu'on fasse.
on va gagner, gagner, gagner. À nous la victoire, notre histoire, elle va changer. Tous les jours, les soirs, c'est la messe. Frérot, tu sais, Goron nous a tous mis dans la S. Ah.
Mothers are kings and fathers are queens. You range in your quest for the truth and striving to sleep. The people in your past can relate.